Good morning, church. It is good to see you all. Good to be together, as always. Whether you are able to be with us here this morning in person or you're joining us online, we want you to know that your presence is felt and appreciated. So thankful for modern technologies that let us do that. That who would have thought how far we've come in about 6 years when we first started, or when we started streaming during COVID. I remember it was just, was that right, 6 years ago? Yeah, okay. It was the elders and me and Jonathan and Tommy. Our singing was terrible. I mean, there was no soprano at all. It was really bad. But that technology has progressed, and of course we've all got to get back together, and makes this such a blessing, and it makes me appreciate the times we get to be together even more. Well, I want to start this morning by asking an open question. This is a question I'm going to ask. I want you to think about it, and then I'm going to try to get a couple of answers. I'll ask you and see if we can get a couple of responses. So here's the question. What are the qualities that make a good leader or a great leader? When you're looking for someone to be a good leader, what do you look for? What qualities do you look for? All right, what do we got? What do you look for in someone when you're picking a leader? What qualities are you looking for? What's that? Integrity. Someone who listens. What's that?
Knowledge.
An encourager. Oh man, these are great, great qualities. What's that? Worthy of being followed. Well, that is pretty debatable. A lot of people think a lot of different things are worth being followed. So you're gonna have to be more specific, Nick. What's worthy of being followed? Now we gotta ask. All right, but yeah, I see what you're saying. What else? What's that?
Empathy.
Ooh, empathetic. I like it. So we have a lot of different ideas. Oh, humble. That's a good one too.
Good communicator.
Charisma. I say someone with thinning hair. Wise. Yeah, these are all great qualities, but there's a lot of different ideas about what makes a good leader. In the spring of 1945, during World War II, Americans were fighting one of the bloodiest battles of the Pacific. It was on the island of Okinawa. And their objective was this jagged, steep cliff. It was, at its highest, it was about 400 feet tall. The soldiers called it Hacksaw Ridge. They made a movie about it. So they climbed this ridge under heavy fire. Machine guns, mortars, explosions. It was happening all around them as they tried to go up and take this position. And somehow they made it to the top. Some of them made it to the top. But then after they get to the top, there's a counterattack by the Japanese. And the Japanese forces pressed back really hard. So hard, in fact, that the order was given for a retreat, for a withdrawal. And so that's what the soldiers did. They went right back down that same cliff. And there was a series of ropes that they, and a net, and they were, you know, they were wounded, they were shaken, they were just trying to survive. But they eventually all came down, except for one man. It was a man named Desmond Doss. And Desmond Doss was a combat medic. He did not carry a weapon because it was against his faith. And so he had made the decision before ever stepping out onto the battlefield that he would never take a life, but that he would do everything he could to save one. So when the rest of his company withdrew, pulled back, Doss stayed alone on the top of that ridge. Gunfire didn't stop. Danger had not passed. In fact, now he is completely exposed, but scattered across this battlefield are the wounded. Some of them just barely alive. And Desmond Doss stayed to be with them. So it's in moments like this, this moments of pressure and crisis, you find out really quickly who is ready to step up and who's ready to step away. It is in decision moments, critical moments, that good leaders are revealed. So we've been going through the book of 1 Peter, if you're wondering how this is pertinent. So Peter is talking to a church that is under pressure. Remember, they're being scrutinized, they're being ostracized, they're being persecuted. And so Peter is addressing the issue of what kind of leader does a suffering church need? Now, we talked about this at the very beginning of this Culture Wars series, is many Christians in America feel like we're under attack, right? They are out to get us. And they could be any number of foes. It could be other religions or anti-religions or worldliness or whatever, but they are out to get us. We are under attack. And so if that is the case, what kind of leaders should we be looking for, right? So just to be clear, I'm going to say this at the outset. This is not a critique of our current leaders of this congregation this morning. I do that in private, and they know. So I can't tell you, in all seriousness, I can't tell you how thankful I am for the men we have that lead our congregation. But sometimes they need reminding, and sometimes we need reminding of what godly leadership actually looks like. Because the standards of this world for leadership and the standards of God's people for leadership are two really different things. And if we're not careful, the church will adopt the world's standards. It never seems to work the other way, that the world accidentally adopts the church's standards. But we can find ourselves easily influenced and choosing the wrong kind of leadership. So this is what Peter says, 1 Peter chapter 5, beginning at verse 1, and we'll also read the beginning of verse 2. It says, "To the elders among you, I appeal to you as a fellow elder and a witness of Christ's sufferings, who also will share in the glory to be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God that is among you." So the very first thing, and this, by the way, this is so subtle. This is so subtle. In fact, it's so subtle, it's just assumed. The very first thing that Peter points out is obvious, so it's easiest for us to miss, but shepherds are among the people. Do you see that? Right there and up there. Shepherds have to be among the people. They have to be living among the people, physically close, relationally close, a presence in that community of faith, a presence in that church, not leading from a distance, not detached decision makers, but right there close by. So when the battle is raging, people don't need leaders far off. They need somebody who knows what's going on right here, right now. They need someone who is in the smoke with them, we might say, right? And again, this may sound obvious, but it is all too easy for church leaders to go from elders and shepherds to a board of directors. Do you hear me, church? It is all too easy for churches to choose their leaders based on who's managed to stay married and done pretty good with their career. You ever been in a part of church like that? Don't raise your hands. I mean, that can become the standards. Well, their kids are pretty good, and they're still married, and they've done good in business, or they've done good in their management job, or whatever. But there is a reason that those churches do not flourish. They may have a lot of people, they may have a lot of programs, but they do not flourish, and it's because shepherds don't lead from a safe distance. They live among the flock. To quote Lynn Anderson, they smell like sheep because they live among the sheep. That's what a good, godly leader does. They get their hands dirty in the lives of dirty people like you and me. So So that's the first thing. They live among the flock. Second thing, Peter says, take care of them, not because you must, but because you're willing, as God wants you to be. Not pursuing dishonest gain, but eager to serve. Not lording it over those who are entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. So the second correct characteristic that marks godly leader is that they lead with the right kind of heart. They have to have the right motivations. And so to illustrate this, what right motivations look like, Peter gives us three sets of contrasting motivations. Different reasons why some people might want to become a leader of anything. I mean, head of the PTA or a principal or a CEO or anybody who wants to be a leader. Question their motives. Trust me. So to illustrate this, he gives us three contrasts. He says, not someone who's doing it reluctantly, but willingly. Why would he say that? Well, because there's a big difference between somebody being ordered to do something versus someone choosing to do something willingly. Right? Someone who's been who has been forced to do something versus someone who is choosing to do something. Godly leaders are godly leaders because they love the people they're leading. Not because, well, somebody's got to do it, I guess I'll do it, right? So it's someone who's doing this willingly, not reluctantly. Second thing, says someone who's not doing it selfishly, but eagerly. I think sometimes churches can get the idea that being a leader grants some sort of status, some sort of a benefit. And there is a benefit to it when you do it the wrong way. There's a lot of benefits to it when you do it the wrong way. But anyone who uses their position for personal gain at the expense of the people they're leading is not a godly leader. They're not a good shepherd. A godly leader makes sacrifices on behalf of the sheep. So that's what he means. Not someone who's doing it to see what they can get out of them, but what they can put in, what they can give. So that's the second contrast. The last one is not forcefully, but by example. Godly leaders don't use intimidation to control others. You can have a bully pulpit when you're an elder or a manager in your business job, or when you're a government official. You can have a bully pulpit, so to speak. But godly leaders don't need to use intimidation to control others. And they don't need to tell you that they're a follower of Jesus, because you can see it in the way that they live. You can see the way they live and say, that's the way I want to live. That's the way I want to lead my life, or I want my kids to lead their lives. They are good examples. Now, we already talked about the pressures from the outside world and how that works on the church, what it's like to live under that pressure. But these pressures are not just testing the flock, not just testing all of us. It also reveals the heart of shepherds. So ask yourself, when times get hard, when things get hard, do these leaders start getting real controlling, or do they withdraw, or do they step forward with humility and courage? Because that's what a godly leader is supposed to do. Finally, beginning at verse 4, and when the chief shepherd appears, you'll receive the crown of glory that will never fade away. In the same way, you who are younger, submit yourselves to your elders. All of you, clothe yourselves with humility toward one another, because God opposes the proud, but shows favor or grace to the humble. So the final attribute of a godly leader is they've got to be following the chief shepherd. A godly leader has got to be following the chief shepherd. One thing that's easy for church leaders to forget is that their flock isn't their flock. It's not actually their flock. The flock belongs to Jesus Christ, that Jesus Christ is the chief shepherd, and I'm just taking care of it for now, serving it for now. So there's a very high level of accountability for our shepherds, for our elders. But there's also a great reward. mean, it's really hard. But there's a great reward. Being a leader, church, I don't know if you understand how, I don't know how hard you think being a church leader is, how hard you think it is being an elder. But I promise you it's harder. Look, I'm not trying to call anyone else out, but y'all are a mess. I mean, collectively, our lives are messy, and we make big, messy decisions. Not just the people you're pointing at right now. Please stop that. All of us. Sometimes they're big, public, messy decisions. And being a godly leader can sometimes feel very overwhelming very quickly. So when they are on the front lines of our lives and it begins to feel like this battle is a lost cause, we have to remember who the battle belongs to. That's what he's saying. That Jesus Christ is the chief shepherd and you're just serving under him. So this is not just for the shepherd. Peter's talking to all of us, reminding us that we've got to stay humble if we want godly leadership. A healthy church under pressure requires sheep that are humble. It also requires shepherds that are humble. And it has to require sheep who are willing to be led. If I know better than the elders, I'm not willing to be led by our elders. I have to be humble enough to say maybe they know best. So thinking back to Desmond Doss, standing alone on top of that ridge after everyone else had retreated, that's when he revealed the sort of leader that he was. The gunfire is still raging, and there are wounded men scattered across the battlefield, so Doss starts moving. And he goes from one soldier to another. He's bandaging wounds. He's lifting men who couldn't stand. He is dragging them across this broken ground until he gets to the edge of this 400-foot cliff. And then he starts doing something that's really almost unthinkable. He rigs a rope and begins lowering these men down to safety, like hand over hand down the cliff, lowering them to safety. And when he finishes with that, he doesn't stop. One by one by one, he'd turn around and go back into the smoke, back into the gunfire, back into the danger, again and again. By the time it was all said and done, Desmond Doss had saved around 75 men. 75 times he had done that. Not by commanding from a distance, not by seeing the big picture, not by giving orders, but by staying would have been easier to leave, by going back when it would have been easier and safer to stop. So later people asked him, of course, like, how did you do this? How did you keep going back into these situations? How did you find the strength to keep stepping back into the battlefield over and over again? And he said that every time he turned around to go back, he prayed a simple prayer. And this was his prayer: Lord, help me get one more. That was it. Lord, help me get one more. And church, I know it is tempting to look for the spectacular. And some people are great performers. They are spectacular. They say the big things. They do the big things. And it is really tempting to look for the spectacular. It's easy to listen to the charming people who are smooth with their words. And they say just what you wanted to hear. I know that we love to get behind people who are powerful because, boy, they can get some stuff done. I understand all of that. But when we are in a situation where the bullets are flying and the battle is raging, we don't need people who are flashy. We need people who are there. The question is not who has the title. The question is who is present. And that's the kind of leaders we need. So to our shepherds, stay among the flock. To our shepherds, lead with the right heart. And to our shepherds, follow the chief shepherd. And when it gets hard, when the pressure rises, when people are hurting, you're just going to have to ask God for the strength to get just one more. Because that's what shepherds on the front line do. They give and they give and they give to just get one more. So my prayer this morning is for us as a congregation, but it's also specifically for our elders, for our shepherds, that we may be the sort of people who can be led, and that our shepherds may be the sort of leaders to come and get us when we don't. This morning, if we can pray for you, encourage you, lift you up, we want to do that this morning. Won't you come as we stand, as we sing?